Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Boston Celtics post-game show, powered by Lynda.com, CLNS, and Pete Brewing, also on board with us. Game 68 of the NBA regular season, and another tough one for the Boston Celtics as they lose at the AT&T Center to the defending champion San Antonio Spurs by the score of 101-89. Cal Lee, your host with me this evening. And we got our man, Matt Rury, who's toughing it out as best as like the Boston Celtics team is trying to fight their way. And my man Matt here is trying to fight his way through what's going to probably be a very long weekend. What's going on, Matt?
What's up, Cal? How's it going, man? You know, I can only blame myself for this because I somehow roped myself into a deal with Calvin Chamberlain that when he's on the show, I remind him a day or two before the show. So I told him yesterday that he was on the show tonight, and he told me that he had other plans. So I've put myself in this situation, so I feel like if anybody had to step up tonight, it was going to be me. So here I am, another terrible game for the Celtics. And there's actually a lot to talk about in this one.
Well, it's kind of funny that you lead in with how you needed to step up and maybe the ramifications might be more lingering for yourself in what's going to happen. I think basically and everyone's going to be talking about it. It's already happening on the Twitter side. Our man Jess Thomas is monitoring that with us tonight this evening from Celtics fans weighing in on the situation that happened with Marcus Smart and our boy, the Red Rocket, Mr. Matt Bonner, in that fourth quarter where there was the apparent low blow coming off of a pick screen. And, clearly that the blow was caught on tape. They did it via the replay center in my hometown of Secaucus, New Jersey. They were
there
on it.
Go.
And unfortunately, you know, Marcus Smart was gone for the rest of the game. Albeit, though, you know, the San Antonio Spurs pretty much had the game somewhat under control. I think the bigger impact of this, though, is not just the fact that he was given a flagrant two and thrown out of this game, but clearly the videotape shows that he did commit the low blow, and this could also mean a possible one or maybe even two-game suspension. I think it'll be a one, but I think that this is a very big blow considering the fact that this is a Boston Celtics team that sits in the eighth position in the playoff chase, and you're losing one of your better defenders coming, you know, in the next game. That's going to hurt, especially since we don't know the status of Isaiah Thomas, who did not play in tonight's game. And clearly, he was definitely needed tonight because the Celtics really could not find that spark offensively to hang with the San Antonio Spurs as they fall prey to the San Antonio Spurs 101-89. We got a lot to discuss here within the little 60-minute program, so we're going to try and weigh in, but we want everyone to dial in. Give us your take about this game. Give us your take about this Boston Celtics team. Wake up, Boston Celtics fans. This team is still in the playoff chase. And if you didn't realize it, they are very much relevant when it comes to playoff discussions. With less than 14 games to go in the season, this team actually does have an opportunity to play in a postseason. So give us a call, 347-215-7771. Myself, Matt Rury, will break down, give you the analytics, we'll give you the statistics, we'll also give you our player of the night, despite the loss by the Boston Celtics. And let's go ahead and get this started right off the bat. Clearly, it's what's been blowing up on the Twitter side, is Marcus Smart's below the belt. I often call it the blow to the ding-a-ling to Matt Bonner. So, yeah, Matt, let me ask you,
did you have to see the replay, or did you see it right away on the first, right off the bat?
I saw it initially. I saw it initially.
Did you? All right. So let me before you get into that, because I didn't see it initially. My roommates that I was hanging out with, they didn't see it initially. Mike Gorman and Scalabrine needed to see the replay. They didn't really say, unless they were told, don't say anything yet until they show the replay. Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell replayed the audio of them watching it live in the arena, albeit a little bit further away. They did not see it initially either. So I really want to hear what you saw at first, because I was like, what is Bonner? Why is Bonner getting in his face? And that was the reaction of the radio guys as well for the call itself.
Well, this is the unfortunate, you know, let's put it like this. Most of the year when I'm watching when I'm catching the Boston Celtics play on television, it's usually through the NESN telecast, okay? Unfortunately, for whatever reason, I had to watch it via the Fox Sports Southwest telecast, which is, I forget who their initial play-by-play commentator is, but their color commentator is Sean Elliott. And when they were playing that telecast, they pretty much had kept a close eye on the scenario situation. Sean Elliott, being a former NBA player, he is not going to be shy about talking about his San Antonio Spurs. So while there was a level of biasness in the way that they showed the camera angle from what I was watching, I saw it. I'm not saying that in any general view, if let's say you were watching it from ESPN, you're watching it from any other particular camera angle, which there is the straight down the middle, coverage of the game, you would not have seen it. But because I was watching it via the San Antonio side, I was able to see it initially. Now,
I do have to give the Celtics guys credit, because when they came back from commercial, they immediately showed the low blow and said, obviously, this is what it is. So it's not like they were trying to hide anything that Marcus Smart did on Comcast. So I'm not trying to say that. Don't get me in trouble here.
No. But what I'm also emphasizing, too, is the fact that, and this is something I think a lot of people have to understand, and this is the way this, you know, sports business goes. You know, each market, each region, they are going to err on the side of loyalty, because that is their core fan base. And clearly San Antonio Spurs still is considered a small market amongst all of the other markets when it comes to covering the NBA, even though they are one of the most successful franchises in the last 20 years. The fact of the matter is that this is what is going to happen. Now, like I said, if I was watching this from any other major network like ESPN, NBA TV, or whatever, I would not have seen that angle that showed Marcus Smart committing the low blow. I think the bigger question was this a malicious intent by Marcus Smart when he committed that low blow? And I think part of that reason also, too, explains the reason why no one was really talking about it, because that's just not Marcus Smart's MO. And Marcus Smart, he plays hard, but he doesn't play cheap. So, you know, the only way that you would have really seen it is the reaction
that
Matt Hart.
Hold on. I don't want to accuse the guy of anything, but he's gotten into it with some big men before. So I'm starting to wonder if he's taken cheap shots before that we just haven't seen. And I don't want to accuse him of that, because I don't think that he has. But on the other hand of it, maybe he's just a big enough point guard, enough of a brute force out there, that big men in the NBA are not used to guys hitting them when they come through screens, and when they're setting screens themselves, they're not used to getting screens set by a 6'3" guy who's that big, and they're hitting them not in the chest but in the ribs or lower, and they don't like it. And they're starting to take a little bit of offense because he plays hard, right? Do you think that's part of it?
I think it's part of it. I think the other thing as well, too, is let's not act as if Marcus Smart came in with the intent to really take it out on every single guy. Let's keep in mind that the Boston Celtics were basically down by 20 points. He is trying to figure out a way to put a little bit of toughness in this team. And I'm not saying that his intent was to do it by hitting Matt Bonner of all people. If you're going to commit a low blow, why would you want to commit a low blow on a guy like Matt Bonner, who only gives you about 5 to 10 minutes or garbage minutes in a game like that? To me, that just doesn't make sense. So I agree with you on the side that if he is just a very physical player at times, I don't think he doesn't recognize how physical he gets, and maybe – he just carelessly, you know, commits this particular type of blow. The other thing I was going to say, too, is that when have we not seen guards of that kind of physical nature get that way? Dwayne Wade does it, did that numerous times. That's part of the reason why there was so much, you know, there was so much mouthing off during those times in the playoffs when the Heat played against the Boston Celtics. So
some people will tell you that Wade is the reason that Isaiah Thomas is out right now. And I thought that was a relatively clean hit.
Right, exactly. It's the physical play of the game. And listen, when you have a history of being that kind of way, like you brought up with regards to Marcus Smart, I think now is when, you know, you as a big, whenever you're playing the Boston Celtics, if you're watching the tape and you see the physicality by which Marcus Smart plays, probably more than any of the other guards, not even Avery Bradley, who is one of their better perimeter defenders and loves to press up on guys and play aggressive, doesn't play as aggressively with physicality like Marcus Smart does. So he's definitely someone, kind of, you could say, is an enigma to the Boston Celtic mantra of playing defense. He's a throwback type of guard that the Boston Celtics haven't had in quite some time. I just think that this was a scenario where he got really aggressive with his play. His arms, you know, his arms tend to, he likes to lash out. He likes to prepare himself when he's about to chip off of the screen or off the pick that's coming from the big. And in this case, he comes in and, you know, he lowers it just below. I mean, and I'm not going to say that he wasn't warranted that he was given the flagrant two and that he is going to be suspended. I think it's unfortunate,
That's the next question. So, first of all, I think he's going to get suspended. I think the game on Sunday against Detroit. And maybe even further than that, but I doubt it. Because while he has sort of gotten into it with players in the past, there does not seem to be that intent in the past. So while the NBA has a history of suspending guys on precedent, I don't know if Adam Silver is going to change that. But either way, this seems to be the type of thing that he's going to get suspended for, even if it was a errant forearm. Or, as Jeff Thomas just emailed us, Cal, Adam Himmelsback of the Boston Globe is saying that it was a freak accident. Would you go that far? Because I think that there was a little bit more than that going on. Marcus Smart is a tough basketball player. He goes hard into picks. He goes hard into every play.
Right, right. So here's my thing. And I can understand why it could even be labeled as a freak accident. And this is my problem right now with the clarification of something like this when you're talking about do you suspend or not suspend a basketball player. Just a week ago, we see Hassan Whiteside, basically Nikita Koloff, Kelly Olynyk in the back of the neck with his getting blindsided. Clearly, it was an intentional hit by Hassan Whiteside. He gets fined. He also gets suspended one game. And everyone saw that should have been more than just a one-game suspension. I don't care what Kelly Olynyk did during the course of that game.
So
you basically clothesline someone in the back of the head like Hassan Whiteside did, and to only get a one-game suspension now makes me look at whatever it is, whatever punishment that they're going to bring down on Marcus Smart because of the fact that it just didn't look like it was so malicious and it was so intentional. But the fact of where he got hit, and it is a part of a team that is a part of the defending champion San Antonio Spurs, there could be some favoritism to it. They're going to probably suspend Marcus Smart for it. But when you look at these two type of plays, really, are we talking about what Hassan Whiteside does to Kelly Olynyk and what Marcus Smart just did to Matt Bynum? There's going to be a one-game suspension for one guy and one-game suspension for another guy? That doesn't make sense to me.
So, wait, I don't know which one you're saying is the worst play, because if there's any intention here with Marcus Smart, that's a low blow. To me, that's worse than hitting somebody in the back, and I thought the Whiteside hit was extremely egregious. I thought the Whiteside hit was very egregious because there's no defense there. At least Bonner, I guess you could say, could defend himself there. But if you wind up in swing, like it looked like Marcus Smart kind of did there, then that means that seems almost just as bad, if not worse.
I kind of disagree on it because, like I said, I think that when you look at the player and you look at his physicality, if you said that, let's say, for example, you know, Marcus Smart goes through, he does it, and then stares dude down as he does it, then you knew that he went in premeditated to commit that blow to Matt Barner. And for that, if you're going to suspend him a game, I get that. In other words, if the line that is drawn is that there is going to be a suspension, it's just a matter of how many games that you suspend this person. I'm completely fine with that. But when you do what Hassan Whiteside did to Kelly Olynyk, let's just keep in mind that Kelly Olynyk does not see Hassan Whiteside coming. Hassan Whiteside is coming from the free throw line and running with full force to the back of the net of Kelly Olynyk. That, to me, deserves more than just a one-game suspension. That should have been a multiple-game suspension, including the fine. So that's what I'm saying. If you want to fine Marcus Smart for an extreme amount, no problem. But if you're going to tell me that what Marcus Smart did falls in the same category of what Hassan Whiteside did, and it merits a one-game suspension, let's keep in mind that this is a one-game suspension while the Boston Celtics are in a playoff chase, right? They're already down on their point guard position as it is. He is your basic starting point guard. So if you're going to suspend Marcus Smart, the blow for the Celtics is more the fact that they now lose another player and that their benches dwindle down even further because of this on a play that really, to me, warrants a more higher fine because it didn't look as malicious as it did when you see other plays that have been committed by players with the ill intent to either hurt or to knock somebody out, and they only get a one-game suspension. That's my only argument with it. But I go by the letter of the law and how the NBA is. It's been caught on camera. Chances are he's going to get suspended.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think he's definitely missing, like I said, the game against the Pistons. Maybe more, but hopefully not, and probably not. And from your argument there, it makes a lot of sense. If you're going to look at different situations like that, it's tough because they have to decide which ones are worse. And there's definitely going to be people that agree on one side and disagree on the other. So I think we can all agree that he probably will get suspended and most definitely will be fined for this if not suspended, because it was not something that I don't know. So here's the question that I had. Does the NBA look at this stuff in slow motion and sort of see him winding up a little bit, or do they look at it in the course of the game a little bit more and see him kind of try to fight through a pick and his arm is just a little low? Because in slow motion, it definitely looks like there was an intent and that he tried to wind up and swing. But in the regular real-time motion of the game, you could argue that he was just trying to fight through that pick, and that's just where his hand was.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, and I think this is part of that reason where there probably needs to be a lot more understanding or more explanation on, you know, clearly the referees are only concerned about that game and that moment. Do you give him a flagrant one for what he did, you give him a flagrant two, and you bounce him out of the game? The fact of the matter is you hit the guy in the groin, and unfortunately you got caught getting hit in the groin. They replayed it enough times to see it was clearly evident that you did it. So that was going to be the flagrant two. So everyone understands that, listen, your day, your night is done, and there's nothing else that could be done about that scenario. I'm just hoping that what the NBA does is that they objectively look at the situation, they look at the history of the player, and they really determine in a fair assessment that, you know what, you know, clearly the suspension of the suspension of the rest of the game is a flagrant two is enough. They suspend the guy is enough. If he really intended and was just malicious in his attempt in doing this, then yes, the suspension is warranted. And, but again, I just wonder where they're going to explain that to me to help justify that a one-game suspension is equivalent to what they to what they would normally what I've seen happen with most players already this year by some of these guys, and only getting a one-game suspension just it just seems so. I just can't tell what the barometer is in determining that a guy deserves more than a one-game suspension if the idea is to deter players from doing something like this. I just think it was a scenario where he got too physical, hit his arms, he did not control his actions, and he hit, you know, knocked Bonner in the groin, you know? That's just, I don't know. To me, it just looked like one of those scenarios where the flagrant two should be enough for what Marcus Smart did, because not really throughout that game did you see anything where Marcus Smart was riling himself up to do it.
All right, so what I was going to say is that this is sort of the problem with the replay era in the NBA, and this is what they sort of need to work through, because in the course of a game, when the referees are looking at that, maybe it doesn't look that bad, and it actually took the referees a second to figure out what was going on, because they didn't blow the whistle until Bonner was the one that got in Marcus Smart's face. And that's what led the referees to even pull the trigger on blowing the whistle, you know? So they needed to go back and look at the replay as well, and then they reassess things. So when the referees can sort of look at that in the middle of a game and see it in slow motion, of course it looks like that Marcus Smart is coming towards the groin and he's going to punch him right in the groin. But it's the same type of thing as if they go back and they see somebody elbow someone inadvertently in the head. And a headshot in the NBA is an automatic flagrant one. If they think there's any sort of intent, it's a flagrant two, you're out of the game. So this is a similar situation where it may look like somebody goes up and hits somebody in the back of the head with an elbow, and really it was just in the course of rebounding action, but now they're thrown out of the game because they look in slow motion and it looks like there may have been a movement towards putting the elbow in the back of this guy's head. This is a straw man, like, hypothetical example, but it's the same type of thing, and I think the NBA needs to sort of look at that and maybe discuss amongst the referees what they saw first before looking at a slow motion replay to determine whether there was any sort of intent.
Definitely. You're tuned to the Celtics and Celtics post-game show. Boston Celtics lose a tough one, 101-89. Cali, Matt Rury, discussing the Boston Celtics. They lose a tough one, but probably more importantly, they may lose one of their key players as the Celtics continue to fight for their playoff lives right now. And kind of ironic that we're talking about this. You know, we often say, is this Celtics team a team that is that could have the potential to really be a good team, you know, going down the road? It's probably only a couple of months ago how we were talking about, you know, this team is still going to be a part of that rebuilding process. And it looks like this process of this team actually becoming a competitive team has moved up a notch on that timetable, because we're really seeing some great play. This is a team that clearly could have ran into a buzzsaw with the San Antonio Spurs. And while they didn't look great, they didn't look nearly as bad as what I probably think that they could have looked if they played the Spurs sometime during the first half of the season.
Wow.
You know, this is a team, again, that they fight, and they fight to a degree where I think they start to annoy teams. You can't put this Celtics team away. There was a point that this team was up by 23 points. The Celtics go on a 16-0 run in that fourth quarter and get it down to as close as to 7 points before Tony Parker hits the dagger jumper to put the Spurs back up by 9 points. Again, another telling tale that Brad Stevens has got these guys believing that they play hard for 48 minutes, and there's just that potential that they can do some good things.
Yeah, I thought the Celtics were going to get rolled by the Spurs. I thought they were just going to get run right over. The Spurs lost to the Knicks not less than a week ago, I thought that Popovich had gotten in their heads and they were not going to lose to any more teams like this, whether it be the Knicks or the Sixers or the Celtics or the Pistons or the Hornets or the Miami Heat, for that matter. I just feel like San Antonio is going to roll for the next month, and look out, because Popovich got in their heads, and that's the way it is. But like you said, the Celtics show that fight, and I think once Smart got ejected, whether you can argue either way, whether the Spurs sort of let up and said, all right, that's it, this one's over, or the Celtics said, all right, let's rally around this and make a run. They went on that 16-2, or maybe it got up to 18-2 run before the Spurs stopped it. It just wasn't enough because they had such a terrible first quarter, Cal. They just couldn't recover.
Yeah, they couldn't. And this is, again, is a byproduct of why the Spurs will always be a dangerous team in the NBA when they are clicking on all cylinders and they're healthy. When the ball moves, one of the problems that the Celtics have is that they just do not have the defensive discipline in order to stay with where the ball goes to. I think from a north-south perspective, this team does do a pretty good job, even for an undersized team like the Boston Celtics are, because clearly you saw that Greg Popovich wanted his bigs to expose the mismatch of having guys like Aron Baynes, Tim Duncan, Tiago Splitter against, you know, guys like Tyler Zeller, Brandon Bass, Kelly Olynyk. They just don't have the physical play to match up with that front court play of the Spurs. Add the fact that those guys are good passers and they basically can commit to any kind of offensive set that they want, be low or high or anywhere on that basketball court. I think the question became, you know, how aware were the Boston Celtics going to be from a defensive level in order to be able to stay with the Spurs? And clearly that first half, like you alluded to, the Celtics were only able to amass 42 points. So basically they were on an 84-point pace, you know, in that game against a team that is one of the more highly efficient offensive teams. You know, when the San Antonio Spurs are dropping close to, you know, dropping close to 60 points, you know, per half, you're not gonna hang. I mean, chances are by the second half, you're probably going to fall down to somewhere in the 30-point, 35-point deficit the way that the Celtics were playing in that first half. Matt, let me ask you this question real quick. When you saw the Boston Celtics as far as their ball movement goes against the San Antonio Spurs, were you actually quite surprised at the way that they were giving themselves opportunity to take shots, or were you more concerned about the fact that the people that they had trying to create that ball movement, trying to get that ball in the basket, clearly is an indication of how badly they needed Isaiah Thomas in this lineup tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually surprised that they got that much ball movement. And early on in this game, it didn't happen. It just wasn't there. And it almost was as if the Spurs and Celtics sort of switched positions in some sort of – oh, this is a terrible – I can't believe I'm going to reference some sort of weird Freaky Friday thing going on here where they switched places. And in the third quarter, things got a little different. But the Celtics were moving the ball a lot better when they came out of the half. And I don't know if it's because Brad Stevens said, listen, you guys need to pass the ball. There's not anybody getting into the lane. You need to move the ball around. But the Spurs were making precision passes all night. They were finding the open man. And it's almost as if for one quarter, the Celtics looked at what the Spurs did and said, oh, let's do it that way. And they started doing that and getting some more ball movement. But, I mean, you said it. Thomas was out, and he probably will be for another 3 to 4 days, if not a whole week, according to Danny Ainge on the radio this morning, I guess. I didn't actually hear the interview, but Mike Gorman alluded to it on the Comcast broadcast that Ainge said Thomas would be out about a week. So he's still not ready, but nobody's getting into the paint. They don't have that slasher. They don't have that guy that they can go to in the fourth quarter. And that's relatively concerning because I think that's a problem maybe across the league. When the best player goes out or the guy that they're used to scoring goes out, nobody else steps up. And I don't want to say nobody across the league because there are plenty of teams that have guys that will step up and play. But I think that there are plenty of teams across the league that if their best player goes down, they are in big trouble. And that's not a good thing as a whole in the NBA.
You're tuned to the Celtics post-game show. Cali, Matt Rury, our man Jess Thomas, hanging on the social media side. Please give us a call here on the line, 347-215-7771. Want to hear from you. I think we got a caller chiming in, ready to talk a little Celtics basketball as they lose tonight to the San Antonio Spurs 101-89. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Boston Celtics post-game show. Let us know who you are and what you thought about tonight's game with the San Antonio Spurs. Hello, caller, you there?
Hello?
You're on the Celtics postgame show, Cal Lee and Matt Rury. How's it going tonight?
Good.
Did you have any thoughts about tonight's game?
What was up with Marcus Smart?
In the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, with the Tiago Splitter deal when he got ejected.
Yeah, Marcus Smart was trying to fight through a pick
that was
set
Matt
by
Bonner,
Matt Bonner.
Yeah. We appreciate the call. And if you're calling out there, 347-215-7771, and you want to get on the air with us, definitely press 1. But we appreciate the call from whoever that was there, I guess, Cal. It was Matt Bonner that that Marcus Smart was sort of matched up against, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, exactly. It just looked like what seemed to have been a routine, you know, pick by, you know, by the Spurs standards, the high low pick. I think Patty Mills was the one who was coming off that was coming off of that pick. Marcus Smart was on him, and in the midst of that, trying to fight through the pick, Marcus Smart just wailed on Matt Barnes' groin, and I mean that's pretty much all she wrote at that point. You know, Marcus Smart was flagged with a flagrant 2 foul. He was ejected out of the game, and right now we're just going to have to wait and see what the NBA does as far as whether or not he may possibly be suspended in this upcoming game, I believe you said, against the Detroit Pistons. So I think that really is the most important aspect of this is regarding the status of Marcus Smart for this next game. The Boston Celtics right now are 30-38. They hold the 8th spot in the Eastern Conference playoff chase. Luckily enough, them running into the defending champion San Antonio Spurs did not hurt them as bad as what other teams had opportunity to catch up to the Boston Celtics tonight. Teams like the Indiana Pacers, the Brooklyn Nets, who are right behind them, they did not capitalize on the Celtics' loss tonight. They lose tonight. Pacers losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then the Brooklyn Nets losing at home to a very skittish Milwaukee Bucks team, a team where a lot of people are looking at that trade that they got Michael Carter-Williams for to be their point guard of the future. This team has not looked good since that trade has happened. And so the Boston Celtics have to feel the luck of the Irish a little bit here because teams had an opportunity to gain some ground, and the Celtics are still in that 8th spot, you know, with 14 games left to go the rest of the season. And so, you know, this is what's going to be expected. The Boston Celtics are not going to win every single game that's left on this schedule, but they have to win the games that they're capable of winning. This game, I don't think anyone anticipated that an angry San Antonio Spurs team, to your point, lost a few nights ago to the New York Knicks when they had a chance to win that basketball game. We're certainly not going to let a team like the Boston Celtics come on their home court and take a win that the San Antonio Spurs, quite frankly, need in order to get themselves right as they gear themselves up for the playoffs against really one of the more daunting, you know, 8-team, you know, playoff pictures that you could ever imagine in recent history. So the Boston Celtics
keep getting worse too for the
exactly.
West. More difficult as the years go by. These Western Conference teams, I don't feel like are getting any worse.
Right. No, exactly. But I think what this is a barometer of seeing how much fight and how much basketball stamina, mental IQ this Celtics team has within them from what they looked like when the season started to what they look like now when you play against a team like the San Antonio Spurs. It doesn't matter if whether or not the San Antonio Spurs would have won this game, you know, by 15 or 55. I think what it comes down to is, are the Boston Celtics playing the kind of basketball that they need to play to continually pull themselves up, make themselves better? They can look at this loss and say, you know what, we lost to the defending champions. We're not good enough to play them. But quite frankly, I think that this is a team that if they keep that competitive spirit like they've shown in tonight's game, where they could have packed it in after that first half. And in most cases, against the Western Conference teams, we've seen this Boston Celtics team. They look like a team that should be getting blown out by like 40-something points or so, and somehow they have these runs that they put, whether it be in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter, but they put together these impressive runs, and it kind of makes you say, you know what, this team has got some fight in them. They're going to be competitive. And in a Eastern Conference where you really can't truly predict except for the two teams that are at the top of the Eastern Conference, the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, any one of these other six teams can get got in the first round should the Boston Celtics play.
Yeah, and I mean, the Celtics went on a run. They first kind of put this thing away after the third quarter, and the Celtics did play well in the fourth quarter, but that's just – to your point there, that they can make those runs and they can find a way to win a quarter. And sometimes in the NBA, that's all that matters. If you win one quarter and you tie the other quarters, guess what? It's easy. You win the game. So sometimes that's all it takes is to win one quarter. And if Brad Stevens can get these guys to play even with some of these teams going down the stretch and then win one quarter in each game after they've played even through three of those quarters, then this team is going to have more success than anybody expected.
You're tuned to the Boston Celtics post-game show. Cali, Matt Rury, powered by Peak Organic Brewing. Clean, crisp, delicious. Peak's beer showcases delicious hops and grains grown by local Northeast farmers. Delicious beers with the best possible ingredients. Follow them at Peak Brewing on your Twitter. And they're also available on Instagram. And check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/peakbrewing. Let's get into some statistics tonight. I know we've been talking heavily about the scenario that happened with Marcus Smart getting that flagrant two. And we've also been talking about the Boston Celtics really in general in their gameplay tonight against the San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio Spurs, again, efficient basketball game, looked very good in the first half, kind of ticked their foot off the gas a little bit around that fourth quarter. But clearly, I think a byproduct of that was just the hustle and execution by the Boston Celtics to make this a competitive game down the latter minutes of that fourth quarter. When you look at this Boston Celtics team, a lot of even scoring across the board. Brandon Bass, 10 points. Avery Bradley, 16 points. Marcus Smart, before he got ejected, had 10 points. Evan Turner led the team with all scores with 17 points. And then even Jay Crowder got in action, you know, dropping 14 points. You know, when Matt, when you look at this team, I don't know what this team is going to look like when they do get back Isaiah Thomas, because clearly this team is going to need a scorer. They're going to need a go-to scorer. Clearly Isaiah Thomas is that guy, and I think he helps all of the other Celtics players go back to their natural way of scoring the basketball. Tonight we saw Evan Turner, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley kind of play outside of themselves and really caused a lot of silly, unnecessary turnovers, which led to easy transition baskets. The San Antonio Spurs are one of the best teams in the NBA when it comes to transition baskets. And this was just one of those scenarios in the first half of the game where you saw, like, it looked like this team was going to get blown out of the water because of the fact that when the shots that they took were the kind of shots that they're not accustomed to taking since they've gotten Isaiah Thomas in that deal from the trade deadline. Guys like Evan Turner, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley had to hold the ball a little bit more, had to be more playmakers rather than play creators, and it really forced the Boston Celtics to play a little bit outside of themselves.
Yeah, a lot of turnovers early. I mean, they had 15 overall, which was cut down quite a bit in the second half, like we've been saying all show. They played so much better in the second half tonight than the first half. It wasn't even close. But they did have a lot of turnovers early on in this game, and I wonder if it's because of the fact that they're sort of hoping that Isaiah Thomas, or not hoping, but they're sort of losing their way without Isaiah Thomas, and the team approach of every other night a different guy steps up and plays well is sort of falling apart in these games against a team like the San Antonio Spurs, a team that is they're like a Swiss Army knife. They can do everything. They can do anything you ask them to do in any situation. You can throw anything at them, and they will counteract it on a night when they're playing well. They're a team that acts with precision, and the Celtics just aren't there yet as far as a championship-caliber team is concerned, especially one that seems to be on a little bit of a mission after losing to the Knicks. I can't keep stressing that enough. So I don't know if the pressure got to the Celtics or they were just all trying to do too much or they just couldn't hack it against the Spurs tonight. But for whatever reason, those turnovers were pretty bad in the first half, and they couldn't recover from that. And they made a valiant effort in the fourth quarter, but it was not enough. And they just obviously they lost this game. It was just a tough one, but I thought that the fight that they showed against a team like the Spurs was encouraging, and down the stretch, I would expect them to win more games against the Eastern Conference than lose, so that's a good thing for their playoff hopes.
Yeah, again, you know, the Boston Celtics in this first quarter, very slow start, sluggish offensively, found it very difficult for them to find quality, high-percentage open shots. I actually saw a lot more of Evan Turner trying to expose some of the mismatch play because he had to play more of a point guard role, you know, in that game of some sort. And one of the things that I did find interesting when I was watching that game is, you know, I saw Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart had a little bit of explosion to him in the beginning of that game. He really looked like the kind of guard where at any given moment he could have taken – you know, Tony Parker. He could have, you know, he could have taken any one of whoever was guarding him kind of off the dribble, maybe except for Kawhi Leonard, because I think Kawhi Leonard is a much smarter defender than I think people really, truly, truly give him credit for when it comes to guarding guards. But in this game, I thought Marcus Smart had a little bit of an opportunity where he could have exposed the San Antonio's backcourt defense a little bit. And he did it very sparingly. It was something that I didn't know if it was more by design or just, again, this is that part of that growth process with Marcus Smart and him understanding, you know, how dynamic of a player he can truly be, and it can be an asset to a team like the Boston Celtics, especially as we start getting to these more important games to maintain themselves and being in the playoff picture. You know, Marcus Smart, 3-for-9 tonight, 1-for-3 from the three-point line, 10 points, 4 assists, 1 steal. Not a lot of the high-volume activity that we expect from one of the tougher young defenders now in the NBA, of that of a Marcus Smart. But there were some signs that, to me, I think that he can, you know, another season, another offseason, training, working out, getting it right, upping his basketball IQ, he could be a very, very explosive guard. And that could be about as lethal a combination as I can think of when you pair him, if the Celtics figure out a way to make sure that they keep Isaiah Thomas for the long haul. Having those two guys, two explosive guys like that, defensively and offensively, that might actually bode well for the Celtics team.
I'm not sure which way this thing's going to go down the stretch here. I'm starting to look at the standings, and I didn't even realize, Cal, that Milwaukee has lost 5 games in a row, and that kind of makes me smile, because I've never really thought of Jason Kidd as a long season coach, and I like what Milwaukee has going on as far as some of their players are concerned, but I just always thought that they were going to sort of fall apart. So this playoff race over the next month or so is shaping up to be something that nobody expected to see. And it could be a 4 or 5 team race for 3 spots here, the 6 through 8 spots. And if Brooklyn gets their act together, they could still be in this thing as well. Not to get away from the Celtics, but, I mean, this could be a 6-team race for 3 spots. Do you see Milwaukee falling out of this thing? I just randomly have to ask you that.
Well, first, let me apologize, because I thought that the game between the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks was over. I didn't realize that the Nets figured out a way to get themselves into overtime, and it took them 3 overtimes to defeat the Milwaukee Bucks. So,
insane.
First, let me preface this by saying, wow, okay, to the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, I gotta give it to Lionel Hollins. You know, this guy has been dealt with quite the motley crew. And if we didn't question just how erratic and how topsy-turvy this lineup of this Boston, this Brooklyn Nets team has been over the last few years, I mean, we truly cannot appreciate the kind of job that a coach really has to manage the kind of egos and to get these guys to still somehow play the kind of competitive level of basketball to even be talked about. Because quite frankly, I thought that as far as on the roster sheet goes, that they should have been one of the top 8 teams that would be playing for the playoffs. Like, they would have just won a number of games and really kind of distanced the Celtics from even any conversation of being in this.
Yeah.
On paper, exactly. But clearly they are who they are. And it won't be until the offseason that we see, you know, Billy King and company do what's necessary to overhaul that roster to a team that Lionel Hollins is going to be able to be, I'm going to say, happy with. But to get them to play at this kind of level, to compete, and to take another win away from the Milwaukee Bucks, really has to say a lot more about how badly the Milwaukee Bucks have been in their decision-making process to keep this team competitive for a whole season. And this is nothing new with the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, how many times have we seen the Milwaukee Bucks been an 8 seed with the kind of team that they've had, and you kept saying they have no business even playing in the playoffs? Because they just don't—they never look good enough, even though they've got some decent players.
I'm just shocked. They were close to a 5 seed this year. They were looking really good. They were in a battle with Washington for that 5th seed, and I mean, actually, for that matter, that does get them relatively close to a four seed because all of that stuff is jumbled as well. But they have just fallen off the map in the last couple of weeks.
Do you know why that is? Do you know why that is? It's time and time again, they continually keep allowing the wrong people to have either influence or to make the decisions that is going to continue to hurt this franchise.
Jason Kidd.
Listen, let's be realistic. Michael Carter Williams winding up. Michael Carter Williams winding up in Milwaukee wasn't by happenstance. That is the influence of Jason Kidd and management. You know, management was enamored with Jason Kidd, hence the whole debacle and craziness that happened of him going to Milwaukee from Brooklyn to begin with.
Yeah, and I quite just frankly, don't get it.
Yeah, and so this here is a clear indication. When you have a team that's basically 12 games above 500, you know, I think that's what it were. They were I think it was anywhere from 8 to 12 games above 500 going into the All-Star break. And then by the trade deadline, you pull this kind of trade where you take a kid like Brandon Knight, who quintessentially was he's your all-star player right now. He could have been in the all-star game. He could have been. That's how good he was for this Milwaukee Bucks team. He is your best player, right? The rest of the other players, they're so-so or they're potentially getting better as they go along. He is your glue. You trade your best player midway while you're in the playoff chase? That makes absolutely no sense. Now, if you have quality players that play like Brandon Knight, like how the Oklahoma City Thunder did when they gave away James Harden, they still had Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Who did the Milwaukee Bucks have that warranted them giving the excuse to say, we're going to trade away Brandon Knight and bring any other guard to come and play for us to still keep them relevant in the playoff chase? See, that's on management and that's on Jason Kidd. Because I knew from the moment that that trade went down, that was going to be their doomsday. This team could very well fall out of the playoff picture if they don't get back to what made them a good, solid basketball team. And I think that they're relying way too much on Michael Carter Williams to do what Brandon Knight did for them in the first half of that season.
I'm sorry. I got a little distracted because we're going to bring a caller on, I think.
I believe so.
I'm working with Jess here. He's doing the nice social media stuff for us. And his friend, Greg, has some things to say, so we're going to bring him on right now. There he is, friend of Jess Thomas.
Good evening, boys.
Hello, Greg. Thank you for calling us. We appreciate it.
First-time listener, first-time caller.
I love it.
Just have a couple quick points to make since it's getting kind of late here, but I really want to mention one thing that might get lost because everyone's going to be focusing on the Marcus Smart punch. People are going to forget about that fourth quarter where you had a 19-3 run led by Evan Turner and Gerald Wallace. And Wallace being remembered as just that $12 million guy on the bench who can make a good inbound pass once in a while. I thought it was an enormous play from the Celtics in the fourth quarter, and it was very telling how Brad Stevens continued using that unit during the entire run. So I want to hear some more about that.
Well, I completely agree with you. You know, I wonder how extensively Gerald Wallace would have been used. I think that this was more of a matchup scenario with Gerald Wallace and the fact that once Marcus Smart went down, the Celtics needed really someone who's going to be able to match up kind of from a swing perspective and also from a front court perspective because now a lot of it is going to be based on Evan Turner playing more of that point guard position, going back to, you know, the what they did in the beginning of the year when they were kind of in that transition and not knowing what to do when they didn't have Marcus Smart when he was injured. So I actually applaud Gerald Wallace's play more than anything because, you know, we've said this time and time again. One of the things that I think is really indicative of how professional some of these guys are, when you look at guys like Brandon Bass, you look at guys like Gerald Wallace, they can kind of get lost in that Boston Celtics lineup. And with the way that Brad Stevens uses his lineup with so much freedom, they're guys that some nights they don't even show up. They're not even playing. And this could have been a night where Gerald Wallace probably would not have been played if the Celtics had their full roster. He stepped up, was ready to go, and really, like you said to your point, Greg, helped aid the Boston Celtics towards that 16-0 run, part of that 19-3 run to even get in with them to getting them within striking distance to even compete with the San Antonio Spurs down the final 3 minutes of the game. Matt, yeah, from what you saw from Gerald Wallace, I mean, I know I can't see where Brad Stevens is going to figure out a way to try to give him more minutes. I mean, clearly we saw more minutes from Gerald Wallace tonight, and we only saw 6 minutes from Luigi D'Antomi. And yeah, recently, D'Antomi is the one who was getting a lot of those minutes off, you know, more than Gerald Wallace.
Well, I mean, Brad Stevens tends to go with matchups, and tonight, I mean, Wallace didn't play that much until Smart got knocked out, or not knocked out, but ejected from the game for that low blow that we've been talking about all night, basically. So Wallace came in at that point, and you know why he came in? Because he's the guy that has to guard Kawhi Leonard. Whether you want to see the matchups or not, Marcus Smart was not necessarily guarding Tony Parker all night. He was matched up with Kawhi Leonard a couple times. They were making a lot of switches tonight. So bringing Wallace in was more of a defensive thing than anything, I think. And D'Antomi is not that guy that's going to be defensive in a game. He's a guy that you throw in there if you're playing against a team that wants to run up and down the court and shoot threes and let guys get offensive rebounds. Luigi D'Antomi was outmatched, overmatched, whatever adjective you want to use tonight, against the San Antonio Spurs, because they have too many big bodies and he just shouldn't be out there on the floor. So I fully back up Brad Stevens for having D'Antomi only play a few minutes and actually using Gerald Wallace in extended minutes, if you want to call it that, for Wallace in his late twilight of his career here, I guess. So I have no questions about that. That seems totally fine with me. But as far as Wallace in general, I think that he's an excellent guy to have on the team. Sure, he's overpaid, and that's why he's still here. But he is a veteran leader that, by all accounts that I've heard, whether it be Jared Weiss doing the Garden Report or just watching Brad Stevens' interviews or listening to them on the radio, he always speaks highly of Gerald Wallace. Every other interview I've ever heard discussing Gerald Wallace, the person is speaking highly of him. So I think that he's a great influence to have in the locker room, and maybe $12 million is a little too much, but keep him here. I'll keep him here because he can contribute too. You saw it tonight.
No, definitely. Greg, and real quick, what was the other point that you wanted to make regarding tonight's game?
All right, so the follow-up to that, which kind of goes right into the Gerald Wallace point, is I'm going to assume that Smart's going to be suspended for at least a game, if not two. And do you think we'll see some of that same kind of play with more Wallace time if Smart is indeed suspended?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm sorry, Matt. I'll let you go ahead and answer that for us. But I think that's a really great question, Greg. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just going to say it's still matchups with Brad Stevens. I mean, if it's one game that he's suspended for, I think maybe you will see a lot more Gerald Wallace because the Detroit Pistons are not a small team. They have Andre Drummond. We'll see if Greg Monroe actually plays because he's been out for the last few games with a knee problem, but it's not a serious one, so he could play. And if he does play, then you may need to bring in a guy like Gerald Wallace to guard some of these bigger players that the Pistons have.
Yeah, I'm gonna also agree with that. When you look at the schedule, and I really appreciate the call, Greg. Thank you for dropping in and some really, really great insight points and questions as well too. When you look at this situation with the Boston Celtics, this could actually be a good thing, so to speak. If the Celtics do lose Marcus Smart for one game, it's the game against the Detroit Pistons because they have the Brooklyn Nets, the Miami Heat, the New York Knicks, and those are three critical games that the Boston Celtics, in my opinion, need much more badly than whether or not they can win, which I think that they should be capable of winning against the Detroit Pistons team come this Sunday. But I think if Brad Stevens has to figure out a way to use Gerald Wallace, this would be the game to be able to use him. I'm still certain that he has belief that Luigi D'Antomi is going to probably have some kind of role as far as how they're going to play. And really depending on how Tyler Zeller matches up against Andre Drummond, how Brandon Bass matches up against Greg Monroe, how those two guys fare, I think is going to play a very important role in the decision-making process as to how Brad Stevens wants to use Gerald Wallace. You know, one of the things that the Detroit Pistons are not afraid of doing, that the Boston Celtics do not show a sense of discipline to is guarding the three-point shot. Stan Van Gundy is going to try and figure out a way to get Reggie Jackson and company to move that basketball around, to open up shots for Kentavious Pope, to open up shots for his man Reggie Jackson and such. I do think that they did take a step back, you know, when they gave away Kyle Singler to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think that took a lot away from their ability to shoot that three ball with freedom. But when you have a front court combination of Monroe and Drummond, and I think it's Quincy Poindexter as well too, who's really come on as of late to help that team. Even though that their record is not indicative of it, they're still going to be a tough out. That could be a very good matchup for Gerald Wallace to play significant minutes to help this Boston Celtics team win come Sunday.
Yeah, and I mean, the Pistons do have other options too. Not that he's been anything consistent for them over the past few weeks, but Jody Meeks is still on this roster as well. And he averages at least one three-pointer a game, and if not more than that. Usually he's hitting two or three. So he's a guy that's not going to score a lot, but just coming off the bench, if you leave him open, he's going to knock down three. So you're absolutely right about that, and that's a guy that you don't even think about when you look at this roster as far as the Pistons are concerned coming up on Sunday night. Here into the TD Garden. So, I mean, they are going to try and jack up three-pointers. It's going to be a matter of whether the Celtics can get those, secure those rebounds when they miss against those big bodies down low. We'll see if Greg Monroe plays. If he doesn't, the Celtics' chances are much better. But if he does play, then they have to defend the three-point line and not even let those guys get shots off. I'd rather see players like Reggie Jackson and Brandon Jennings, and actually, is Jennings even going to play? He's not, is he? I'd rather see these guys driving to the hoop against the likes of Kelly Olynyk, as I chuckle, and Shavlik Randolph. Bring him in. Bring him in off the bench. Play some defense. What I'm saying. I'd defend the three-point line against the Pistons on Sunday night, please.
Yeah, throw them all out there, you know, and I think that's the key. I think the key for the Boston Celtics in this game is just play sound defense, and I think everything else will take care of itself. This team, this Detroit Pistons team, is not a great defensive team. However, the most dangerous player can possibly be Reggie Jackson, in the sense that, listen, just about a week ago, he dropped 20 points and 20 assists. So it's not like he's capable of. However, again, it's more important for the Celtics because they have to win these basketball games. These are games that they should be able to win so they can maintain themselves in this playoff picture. And like you said before, when you got teams like the Toronto Raptors struggling, the Milwaukee Bucks struggling, the Miami Heat barely hanging on for dear life, Indiana Pacers on the come up, Charlotte Hornets trying to play spoiler, all of these teams are going to play a factor in the next coming weeks as to whether or not the Celtics team is going to be in the playoff picture or looking from the outside looking in. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But it all starts this Sunday. The Detroit Pistons come to town to the Garden to take on the Boston Celtics, 6 p.m. So that means that we will be doing our post-game show around 8 p.m.,
That's right.
We'll definitely have our people out there covering it. You,
it's me, and
the
Munger.
Man. And so you know what that means. That means that the Celtics have to bring their A game because there's no two tougher critics that is going to be on them from tip-off to the game end, to the buzzer sound, than you and Mikey.
Man, Munger watches the refs. I'll be watching the Celtics. We'll see what happens there. Hopefully the refs call a clean game, and I won't have a tough time talking him off a ledge.
Well, we'd like to thank our guests for calling in tonight. Really great topic of conversation. Make sure that you keep your eyes tuned with what will happen with Marcus Smart. Again, we're waiting to see whether or not he will get suspended by the NBA for the low blow in the fourth quarter. For the Boston Celtics post-game show, I'd like to thank our man Jess Thomas on the social media side for weighing in and help us get you guys to give us a call here. CLNS Radio doing our thing. And I'd also like to thank my co-host Matt Rury for toughing it out despite all things going. My man was able to jump on here, help us out, really call and break down a great game, even though the Celtics wind up on the losing end of this. Celtics lose to the San Antonio Spurs 101-89. Be sure to check us out, CLNS Radio, here on Sunday night, 8 p.m., Matt Rury, Mike Munger, giving you the break Celtics and the Pistons. For the Boston Celtics postgame show, Cal Lee, Matt Rury, you guys have a great night. We'll catch up with you guys next time.
Later, guys.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.